Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the May 20th, 2025 regular meeting of the San Francisco County Transportation Authority Board. I'm Commissioner Myrna Melgar, Chair of the Board. Our Vice Chair is Danny Sauter. Welcome back, Commissioner Mandelman. We look forward to hearing all the wonderful things you learned about public transportation in Japan. The clerk today is Amy Sayong. I would also like to acknowledge Jaime Echeverry at SFGov TV for staffing this meeting. Madam Clerk, please call the roll and then make your announcements.
Commissioner Chan. Chan absent. Commissioner Chen. Chen present. Commissioner Dorsey. Dorsey present. Commissioner Ingardio. Ingardio present. Commissioner Fielder. Fielder present. Commissioner Mahmood. Mahmood present. Commissioner Mandelman. Mandelman present. Chair Melgar.
Present.
Melgar present. Vice Chair Sauter. Present. Sauter present. Commissioner Sherrill. Present. Sherrill present. Commissioner Walton. Present. Walton present. Chair, we have quorum. For members of the public interested in participating in this meeting, we welcome your attendance here in person in the Legislative Chamber, Room 250 in City Hall, or you may watch cable channel 26 or 99, or stream the meeting live at sfgovtv.org. For those wishing to make public comment remotely, the best way to do so is by dialing 415-655-0001, and when prompted, entering access code 2665-364-2398, and then pound and pound again. You will be able to listen to the meeting in real time. When public comment is called for the item you wish to speak on, press star 3 to be added to the queue to speak. Do not press star 3 again, or you will be removed from the queue. When the system says your line is unmuted, the live operator will advise you that you are allowed 2 minutes to speak. When your 2 minutes are up, we will move on to the next caller. Calls will be taken in the order in which they are received. Best practices are to speak slowly, clearly, and turn down the volume of any televisions or radios around you. Public comment for items on this agenda will be taken first from members of the public in attendance in the legislative chamber, and then afterwards from the remote speaker's queue on the telephone line. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Commissioner Chan is running a little bit late, but we are expecting her. Before calling the next item, as Chair, I'd like to invoke Rule 3.26 from the Rules of Order to limit total public comment per item to 30 minutes for today's meeting. Each speaker will have 2 minutes to speak on a given item. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 2, Chair's Report. This is an information item.
Colleagues, it has been a busy month with development on many fronts. First, I am grateful to all the elected officials, advocates, and community members who have been riding and rolling to work and everywhere this month. Biking and rolling activity started with Bike and Roll to School Week, which I know many of you attended, and continued with Bike to Wherever Day across the city last week. We also held a hearing yesterday at the Land Use and Transportation Committee of the board to discuss the status of our efforts to implement projects, such as the recently adopted SFMTA's Biking and Rolling Plan and our Vision Zero strategies. Thank you to my colleagues and our staff are helping to fund these projects with many of our fund programs and to keep implementing those safer corridors. Next, it was a joy to help welcome the California Transportation Commission to San Francisco for their May meeting. The Transportation Authority staff hosted the Interagency Equity Committee meetings, and it was a pleasure to join statewide leaders on tour of electrified Caltrain last week. It was fascinating to see the infrastructure behind this award-winning service, including the transformers in the substations that are making it possible for Caltrain to operate from San Francisco to Gilroy carbon-free, entirely on its own power, and even generating excess power to send back to the grid. Amazingly, we have reduced carbon emissions by 90%, which is especially helpful for District 6, Commissioner Dorsey's district. Turning to transit funding, I want to thank MTC Chair Nowak for coming to meet with San Francisco representatives on Senate Bill 63, For her leadership and collaboration on regional transit funding efforts, the region is really putting together with unanimous positions of support for SB 63 from Caltrain and VTA in the South Bay, and my hope is that we can find a path forward soon for both regional and local measures for 2026. In the meantime, we continue to work with Senators Wiener and Arreguin, transit leaders, and a coalition of civic, business, and labor groups on the transit funding ask within the state budget. Last week's proposal by Governor Newsom was worrisome for how little it included to address statewide transit needs and for the potential impacts it contained to already committed funding to rail projects, including those led by Bay Area operators. I know that many of us were hoping for the renewal of the California's cap and trade programs, now dubbed Cap and Invest, in the governor's budget to enhance transit capital and operating funding, and now we may need to move quickly and decisively to protect historic levels and prior allocations for our operators. Thank you to our staff for tracking this closely and working with MTC and others to advocate for changes to this legislation as warranted going forward. And finally, I wanted to close with appreciation to international colleagues from the Japanese Consul's General, including staff from the Ministry of Land, Infrastructure, and Transport, for meeting with us this month. They're in California for an international rail conference, and we appreciate their visit. It was a pleasure to meet with them, to learn from their wealth of experience, which we hope to build in the future. I know that President Mandelman will also share his learnings from his recent trip to see these systems in person as well. And with that, I conclude my remarks. I don't know if there's any other comments at this time, but if not, let's go to public comment on this item.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on this item? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for a remote public comment. And there is no remote public comment.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Please call the next item.
Item 3, Executive Director's Report. This is an information item.
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners. As Chair Melgar just mentioned, we were very pleased to receive the staff from the Consulate General of Japan earlier this month, who were also helpful in facilitating President Mandelman's some of his meetings held this past week on his trip over with the Chamber and Bay Area Council delegation. And maybe at this time, I might invite President Mandelman to perhaps report out on those activities.
Madam Chair?
Yes, please. President Mandelman.
Thank you, Madam Executive Director. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's good to be back with all of you. And yes, I did get to take an amazing trip to Japan. The Chamber was there for a six-day visit with lots of business leaders and checked out Expo, World Expo, which is amazing. I think if folks don't already know, you probably will soon. The Chamber, I think, has some hopes that we might be able to get an Expo to San Francisco in 2035. It's a massive project. But also, I think, conceivably, in terms of driving some infrastructure funding and unsticking some long-stuck projects could potentially be a useful thing. Anyway, that's, I think, a conversation that's going to be happening here and with the Chamber going forward. I did, thanks to work by our TA staff and Calvin Ho in my office, got to meet with a couple of the Japan Railways companies while I was in Tokyo. They are world leaders in innovative financing of rail investment transit oriented development. On May 12th, I met with representatives of the East Japan Railway Company for a site visit of their Takanawa Gateway Station and Gateway City Development, which has more than 9 million square feet of mixed-use development at the Takanawa Station. And then the next day, I was welcomed by senior staff from the Central Japan Railway company to their headquarters in Tokyo, and we were joined via Zoom by Jesse Kaler from the Transportation Authority. JR Central operates the high-speed Shinkansen line between Tokyo and Osaka, and has also implemented large transit-oriented development, including giant investment and development at their Nagoya Station complex. My lessons learned, it's in some ways so incredibly different. For anybody who's goes to Japan, I encourage all of you to go to Japan. The experience of transit, not just in Tokyo, but actually in cities across Japan and in getting between cities on transit is just extraordinary. The tendency of a policymaker is then to be like, well, how can we make that happen back home? And of course, I want to see us have rail and transit that is every bit as good as Japan's. And I was also struck by how very, very different the context there is. The first part is it is such an incredibly vast system, again, across many cities, not just in Tokyo. Another thing about Japan Rail is that at least the Japan Railways, there are a number of companies, private companies, delivering transit in these different regions of Japan. It was a national railway up until the 1980s, but then it was broken up, there are now these different private operators. So, of course, my questions initially had a lot to do with, like, well, what's the relationship between public and private, and what kind of public subsidy is there, and is the private development that you're all doing subsidizing the transit operations that you have? And the answer that I got from these railways companies was sort of a puzzled look, because transit is self-sufficient and profitable for these rail lines. They're not getting public subsidy, with one big exception, the Maglev project, because they have a volume and a cost structure that makes transit profitable as a private activity in Japan. So, first depressing note. There is a little bit, I did sort of tease out, they're working on a maglev line to connect Tokyo and Osaka, and it's, I think that has been a long project for them and an expensive one, and it sounds like there may be a little bit of public subsidy in the form of a low-interest loan coming in, but for us, for like $3 billion of a $20 billion project or something like that. Another thing, just about the high-speed Shinkansen line running at 280 miles between Osaka and Tokyo in 2 hours and 15 minutes. So you get on, 2 hours and 15 minutes later, you're in the other city, with lots of stops along the way, by the way. And the Maglev line that they're developing and are going to open up in the early 2030s is going to take that down to a 67-minute trip from Tokyo to Osaka, 280 miles. Also depressing and amazing. So they have these vast, transit-oriented developments, again, but not to cross-subsidize the transit, just because they're private corporations that are interested in developing housing and other uses, and that's what they do. The regulatory environment is also vastly different. I asked them about, what kind of safety regulation or government regulation are you dealing with? And they said, well, of course, government can't tell us very much about how to do our job, because we know how to run our transit systems best. So there's not a lot of government oversight. And so what they're relying on is a culture of performance and delivery. And if you fail, that's a terrible, terrible thing. They apologize when their transit is late. So another, difference. A further difference is the labor environment. There are unions, but they're basically company unions, and there are never strikes. But there's also a relationship with their workers, where people go to work for these companies, out of college, and remain there for their entire careers, and that will be where they work for the entire time. These executives that I met with, all of them had started with the rail company as a driver or as a ticket taker. And that was just the culture. They'd seen the entirety of the company. They stayed there their entire lives. They had a notion of performance and service and obligation that was going to keep them doing the right thing and delivering this amazing service to their customers. So I'm torn, because on the one hand, we see a these transportation systems that are working amazingly and clearly something to aspire to and clearly show that we can do things differently than we do here, and also such great cultural and other differences that make it hard to imagine us exactly replicating what they do. But it was incredibly informative. I'm incredibly grateful, Tilly, to you and your staff for helping, you know, working with Calvin to organize those meetings. And I hope that some of this will be knowledge that we can help put to use here. Although, again, I think keeping in mind the different context is important. So, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, President Mantleman, for that report out.
Wonderful. Really appreciate, especially in your capacity as Vice Chair, again, of the Transbay Joint Powers Authority, as well as here at the TA and at the Board of Supervisors. So turning to a related update, the Japan Council folks and Jesse Kaler of our staff will be joining CALSTA, the State Transportation Agency in Southern California, this week for the Binational Rail Decarbonization Forum in Los Angeles. And of course, the relationship there is through California's entire statewide network and state rail plan, including high-speed rail, including the portal, and all the related investments that we are trying to make and keep moving forward here in California. Turning to other federal updates, unfortunately, commissioners, I do need to report that a couple of weeks ago, we received written letter of termination of our EPA grant for the Treasure Island Connects program. As you'll recall from a prior report I gave, that grant had been paused since late January. The termination stated that the objectives of the award are no longer consistent. The objectives of our project are no longer consistent with the EPA's priorities. Of course, we are very disappointed by this development. Together with our colleagues in the city, we are assessing the information contained in the letter, and the direction of Chair Dorsey of TIMA will be bringing forward an annual budget to you in June through the TIMA, as well to seek alternative funding for some of the activities, but will not be able to recognize that grant going forward. We are evaluating our options and will be providing updates as soon as possible. Related now to the state update that Chair gave, Senate Bill 63, we do continue to work together with the region and MTC on a third-party review, as well as a five-county transportation funding and responsibility plan for helping to meet the shortfall of four major operators, BART, Muni, Caltrain, and AC Transit. In support of that effort, we'll be meeting a few more times and reporting out later this month to help inform MTC and the region-wide coalition to understand what the options may be for a regional measure under SB 63 in the fall of next year. And of course, we'll be working as well locally with MTA and the city to understand as well what the picture may look like for the regional measure combined with a potential local measure as well. Turning to our planning efforts, the San Francisco Freeway Network Management Study Team held its first working group meeting on May 19th. So thank you to Deputy for Planning Rachel Hyatt and Eliza Paz for meeting as well with all of this community working group. The first phase of work is to look at the opportunity to manage demand on our freeways, which, as you heard earlier, is growing faster than even local traffic as part of our recovery. So we want to guide that toward a healthy recovery and make sure that folks have great options and reliability as we do recover. So thank you as well to all the working group members who span a number of districts, neighborhood groups and businesses, civic and other organizations who are helping us to analyze the conditions that are expected, as well as the different options to manage freeway demand, including carpool lanes and express lanes and all of the like type of options. We are also conducting outreach on our I-280 Ocean Avenue off-ramp, the other part of town over in the City College area off 280. This is the work that had been reviewed several years ago, coming out of prior Balboa Park circulation studies and community-based plans to replace the free-flow off-ramp there with a signalized intersection and to provide as well bike connections on the overpass of 280 toward City College going westbound. So when complete, the project is expected to improve pedestrian and bicycle safety, as well as vehicle safety and circulation. The project team will host an in-person town hall event scheduled for June 11th at City College from 6 to 7 p.m. So we invite the public, neighbors, everyone to attend that event. Our staff are also available to provide presentations directly to neighborhood groups and organizations in the area, providing an overview of the project and collecting community feedback. And then we'll be, of course, able to report back to you all on the results of that outreach and to provide next steps. Turning now to project delivery, congratulations to SF Public Works, Commissioner Walton, and community members. We were very pleased to celebrate also with Mayor Lurie on April 28th, the opening of the Petro Gateway Project. This is an initiative to reconnect and revitalize the Potrero Hill neighborhood with crossings beneath the US 101 freeway and between San Bruno, Vermont, and 17th Streets, providing new enhancements, including a widened sidewalk, bulb outs, and protected bicycle lanes, landscaping, pedestrian lighting, and beautiful art by local artists. The Transportation Authority was proud to support the design and construction with $300,000 of Prop AA vehicle registration fee funds. Another project delivery update is due to the Golden Gate Bridge Highway and Transit District completing the SF Ferry Terminal Security Improvement Project. We were proud to provide $347,000 in sales tax funding to support the design and construction of those improvements, including four new security gates and bollards, as well as to make the area more secure and resilient near the Port of San Francisco. Finally, just wanted to extend another set of congratulations to our Capital Projects team. Carl Holmes is in Washington, D.C. presently, where he is accepting our fourth award for the Southgate project, the I-80 Bay Bridge Southgate project on Yerba Buena Island. This is from the American Council of Engineering Companies for the National 2025 Engineering Excellence Honor Award. So congratulations to Carl and the extended team. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Director Chang and President Mantelman, for the presentation. Madam Clerk, let's go to public comment on this item, please.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item three? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment. Hi, caller. Your 2 minutes begins now.
Good morning, Chair Melgar and Commissioner Ron Urban, San Jose. Thank you for the opportunity. I'd like to touch on a couple of things, the Japan trip and the polo. The Japan trip, I cannot tell you how excited and encouraged about this significant development. And I also like to really appreciate it, Commissioner Mandelman's report, and just bring to your attention that being able to operate public transit without subsidy is not unique to Japan. You will find the exact same thing in Hong Kong and probably other places in the world. But the thing, I think we really, really want to learn from the Japanese when they go around developing their infrastructure is that they learned back in the 80s that we could not carry on doing this the way we're currently doing it in North America. And they learned that the way to get these projects done on time and on budget with very severe labor shortages is to transit to a modular construction. We've really got to learn about how the Japanese do this, because without that, they would never have been able to build a Shinkansen. Now, moving to the portal, I think our next step is to introduce legislation modeled after the Gateway Development Commission in New York, which was authored by Senator Chuck Schumer back in 2019. It's currently under construction, and that is thanks to a full funding agreement of $16 billion. Thank you.
Thank you, Fowler. There is no additional public comment.
Okay, public comment is closed. Thank you. Madam Clerk, let's go to item number four, please.
Item four, approve the minutes of the May 13th, 2025 meeting. This is an action item.
Okay, I don't see anyone on the roster for this one. Let's go to public comment on this.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item four? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no public comment.
Okay, public comment is closed. Colleagues, may I have a motion by Commissioner Mandelman, seconded by Commissioner Chen. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
On the motion to approve item four, Commissioner Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. Commissioner Chen. Chen, aye. Commissioner Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Commissioner Ingardial.
Aye.
Ingardial, aye. Commissioner Fielder.
Aye.
Fielder, aye. Commissioner Mahmood.
Aye.
Mahmood, aye. Commissioner Mandelman.
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Vice Chair Sauter.
Aye.
Sauter, aye. Commissioner Sherrill.
Aye.
Sherrill, aye. Commissioner Walton. Walton, aye. There are 11 ayes. The minutes are approved.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Let's go to the consent agenda, please.
Okay. Items 5 through 8 comprise the consent agenda. Staff is not planning to present on these items, but are available for questions.
Okay. Thank you. I don't see anyone on the roster. Don't think we need public comment for this one, since it's already been heard. Colleagues, may I have a motion and a second for this? Motion by Mandelman, seconded by Sherrill. Madam Clerk, I think we can take the same house, same call. Let's go on to the next item, please.
Item 9, San Francisco Transportation Plan 2050 Plus Update. This is an information item.
Okay, we have Ms. Suani Cho here to present, along with David Long. So, welcome, Ms. Cho.
Good morning, Commissioners. Suani Cho, Assistant Deputy Director for Planning. I'm here to present the San Francisco Transportation 2050 Plus item. This is an information item, and I'm SFGov. I'm sharing my slides. Okay. We provided a full presentation deck in your packet that we'll use for public engagement. So this morning I'll provide a summary level walkthrough of the presentation. And so I'll be skipping over some of the slides in the interest of time. Oh, dang, sorry.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Okay. Should we take a small break,
yes,
like 5 minutes, and see if we can get this in English?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take a 5 minute break, folks, and we will reconvene when the presentation is available. Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
Okay, colleagues, I think we're ready. Ms. Cho, please go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry about that. I'm sharing my slides. Great. Thank you. So briefly, the San Francisco Transportation Plan is the 30-year investment plan for our transportation investments. It's one of our core responsibilities as the transportation authority. It also includes a vision plan for potential new revenues that we might expect to see in 30 years. And it also includes policy initiatives that help us reach our goals. Our SFTP is coordinated as required with the Regional Plan Bay Area. And these are the five goals that we strive to achieve with the SFTP: equity, economic vitality, environmental sustainability, safety and livability, and accountability and engagement. These goals were developed with the SFMTA and the Planning Department over years of work, including community input. Our current effort is a focused update driven by the changes in travel trends and by reductions in revenue projections. We're launching the first round of our public engagement efforts with this informational item today. So here is a summary of how things have changed in the last few years. This data comes from the census and from the Household Travel Diary Survey conducted in 2019 and 2023. This section will echo a lot of what you heard last week in our downtown travel study report. San Francisco's population and jobs have declined in the last few years. Adjusting for inflation, average income is effectively lower. We have more older residents, and in addition to more older adults, we have fewer residents between the ages of 18 and 44. The biggest headline change, as you've heard, is the drop in travel, 41% fewer trips to, from, and within San Francisco. And we also see that regional transit trips are down. More people are working from home. On a typical weekday, almost three times as many San Franciscans work from home as they did previously. This data is as of 2023, and how and where people work is something that we know is evolving. And we're following this trend as it changes. In addition to working from home, we also shop from home a lot more. The number of people getting a delivery on a typical weekday went up by half, from 28% to 42%. This increase in deliveries presents new questions for our transportation system: whether delivery vehicles are causing more traffic or more parking problems in certain neighborhoods, et cetera. We don't have a lot of data on goods movement right now, but this is something we're interested in looking into. This is another look at the decrease in travel. The point on this slide is that people are not leaving the house primarily to go to work as they used to. What you see in the bottom bar here is that there are almost as many people on transit for personal or leisure reasons in the purple and yellow as for work, which is in the blue. This is why we see transit ridership has recovered more strongly on evenings and weekends than during the traditional commute rush hour. This graph shows the 41% drop. We saw 600,000 fewer trips on transit and a significant reduction in all trips around the region. The share of trips made by transit decreased by 8 percentage points, while the share made in cars increased by 8 percentage points. Although in absolute numbers, there are fewer trips made by car. We note also that part of the reason that for fewer transit trips in 2023 was that there was less transit service on the street. Here is the mode share data by income group. We found the biggest changes in travel behavior among the lowest income San Franciscans, defined as households making less than $75,000. Since 2019, this group started to drive alone more and use ride hail services like Uber and Lyft a lot more, and to walk and take transit less. We know through census data that people in the lower income groups are much less likely to work from home, and so it's even more important that they have affordable, convenient transit options or transportation options and don't always have to rely on a car to get around. Another critical issue we're facing today is the transit fiscal cliff, as we're all aware. We're working collaboratively with SFMTA on funding packages through the Muni Funding Working Group to address Muni's needs, and we're also working with MTC and other counties on the design of a potential regional revenue measure to address the issue. For the purposes of our long-range transit plan, we do assume that we will find solutions to this immediate crisis and that revenues will be available to support transit service at 2023 levels. However, we do all know that there's significant risk of major service cuts if those revenues don't materialize in the near term. With all this updated data, we forecast what the city will look like in 2050. Our projections must align with those in Plan Bay Area, which forecasts more households, people, and jobs in San Francisco. Within San Francisco, the planning department provides guidance on where those jobs and households are located. For the purposes of this SFTP update, as I mentioned, we assume transit service levels as they are in were in 2023, and the transportation projects that are in progress and funded will be completed. So with our current travel patterns and assumptions about the future system, we'll see more crowded transit. The red and pink indicate Muni services that are crowded today and expected to become more crowded in the future without additional investment. Crowded transit is uncomfortable, of course, but it also contributes to delays and unreliability, which in turn impact our economic vitality, livability, and equity. Without additional investment, the roadway network, too, particularly the freeways, will be at or above capacity, meaning more congestion and slower speeds. Red indicates where there are more vehicles than the roadway is designed to handle. You can see the change on the Bay Bridge and Highway 101, where it becomes almost completely red in both directions, and we start to see spots on the west side getting more congested. And again, this impacts our efforts to improve economic vitality, livability, and sustainability. Another metric we look at is job access, which we use to measure our progress on the economic vitality and equity goals. We see that in 2050, job access does increase, due in part to the assumption that we locate jobs and housing near transit. You can see in the blue bars on the right that people who can drive can get to almost twice as many jobs as those who commute by transit. However, we do also see that the increase in jobs accessible by transit for lower income folks is a little bit higher than for the population in general. So, excuse me. In all, if our travel patterns continue as they are, we will not achieve our goals of economic vitality, safety and livability, equity, and environmental sustainability. We also face challenges in keeping up with our maintenance needs as well as in addressing our climate change risks. We need to invest in our system strategically to make progress toward our goals and ensure a healthy recovery. We want everyone to be able to travel around the city and region in whatever mode they choose, comfortably and safely. So this next section is about transportation revenues and investment plan. Overall, we're seeing a 12% drop in revenues over the next 30 years. We expect revenues from federal, state, and regional sources to be approximately the same. Those are the bottom three bands. And where we see lagging, significantly lower revenues is in San Francisco, which is in pink. San Francisco is seeing a lagging recovery as compared to the region because we've been hit particularly hard by the work from home trend and the resulting drop in transit ridership and revenue. I also want to note here that we're including some of the new revenues from the potential revenue measures in the investment plan, and that's shown in the blue hatch. Our investment plan is now expected to be about approximately $70 billion, about 12% less than what we had in the last update. Most of this, about $60 billion, is committed to specific projects or uses. Roughly $10 billion, then, is discretionary. In addition, we show approximately $15 billion in the vision plan, and we're proposing to keep that amount the same as it was in the last major update. the Vision Plan funds are potential new funds we might see over 30 years to help this to move the city closer to our long-term goals. These could be new revenues from other sources, potentially ballot measures, potentially private contributions or other sources. This pie chart gives you a sense of the allocation of our funding for these projects and programs in the last plan. Transit operations and enhancements in the dark green is the biggest slice of the pie by far. The second biggest category is transit and roadway maintenance, generally keeping our transportation system in a state of good repair. And that is, those are projects that help us save money in the long run. So, given lower revenue projections, we need to adjust our investment plan, which is required to be financially constrained. Following MTC's approach, we first prioritize transit operations to maintain the 2023 service levels. And second, we fund maintenance projects for transit and roadways. We could spend every dollar we have on those two categories, but we reserve some discretionary funds for the other categories. And here I'll just skip through these really quickly. Safer and complete streets, major transit projects, next generation roadways and freeway management, transportation system management and planning. And then for the public, we will then pose these three questions to based on the presentation. The intent is to listen for their priorities on these categories of spending. So I won't read through these, but here are the three questions. Finally, as I mentioned, we're launching our public engagement today. We have an online survey on our website, translated into Spanish, Chinese, and Filipino. We've scheduled two virtual town halls on June 4th and June 7th, and a recording of this presentation will also be posted on the website. We've reached out to community organizations all across the city and have actually started to schedule some meetings with them, and thank you for the commissioners who have provided additional groups for us to reach out to. We'll use that input to develop a revised investment plan and vision plan, and expect to engage with the public again when that's done this coming winter. We expect to have a draft plan next spring. So that concludes the SFTP portion of the presentation. I'll turn it over to David Long, who will provide an update on the West Side.
Thank you, Ms. Cho. Welcome, Mr. Long.
All right. Thank you, Swanee. Right. So the SFTP Plus is a long-range plan and has a 30-year time horizon. That's what Swanee just presented. But we know that the West Side has specific needs and are committed as a city to addressing those needs on multiple time horizons. And to do that, we are undertaking the West Side Network study in parallel with the SFTP Plus. The West Side specific look will seek to understand how people on the West
Side. Pardon, David. SFGov TV, we're sharing slides. Thank you.
Oh, we never stopped sharing. Maybe we did online. Should I go back? Okay, we'll restart here. Sharing slides. So what Swanee just presented was the SFTP Plus, that San Francisco's long-range transportation plan with a 30-year time horizon. But we know that the West Side has specific needs and are committed as a city to addressing those needs on multiple time horizons. To do that, we're undertaking the West Side Network study in parallel with the SFTP Plus. So this West Side specific look will seek to understand how people on the West Side travel now and what that looks like in 2050, given existing needs, planned projects, and future residents. We'll then recommend ways to improve transportation on the West Side in the 10 to 15 year range, which advance SFTP Plus goals. It's important to note that we're not starting from scratch. There's been quite a bit of planning work on the West Side over the last decade, which has serviced community needs and identified projects and programs to address them. We started our process by reviewing that work, inventorying completed, ongoing, and planned projects, which addressed those needs, then layered in West Side-specific findings from some of the future year travel modeling, which Swanee just shared. Through that process, we've identified a number of West Side needs, which could warrant additional attention. So, as I just mentioned, a lot of planning has been done for the West Side, and this is a great starting point. You see a few of those plans here. We found that many identified needs in those plans have been addressed or have projects in the pipeline, while some warrant additional city attention. And our transportation modeling helped add context to some of those previously identified needs and allowed the team to identify new West Side challenges that could arise as we look to 2050. By 2050, we expect each individual West Side adult to drive less. However, we expect more people in San Francisco, and as a whole, that means more cars on West Side roads. We expect growth to materialize slowly, and then by 2050, transit corridors, no transit corridors will experience significant crowding in the West Side segments of their routes. Nonetheless, as Swanee shared earlier, we do anticipate that transit routes which serve West Siders could experience crowding as they approach the downtown core. Some portions of West Side arterials, including portions of 19th, Crossover, and Skyline, could have increased congestion by 2050. So when we consider past planning efforts, ongoing projects, and expected future conditions together, four main categories of need emerge. The first here is a need to improve travel choices. West Siders face particular geographic barriers to east-west travel, mostly the huge hills separating the West Side from the rest of the city. Folks could benefit from making it easier for people to access transit stops, whether by walking, biking, or driving. Safe routes to schools continues to be an important need, and programs which improve travel options and access to critical destinations, such as jobs and schools, especially for people without cars, could be important to help West Siders realize the same job access improvements that we expect San Francisco as a whole to see by 2050. When we look at transit specifically, we see a need for better transit options for trips between the West Side and South Bay, as well as transit reliability improvements. A number of walking, rolling, and cycling needs were highlighted, including the need for safety improvements and mitigations for speeding vehicles, the need for high-quality bike lanes, especially connecting to transit hubs, schools, and major destinations, along with all-day secure bike parking at those same places. And there are several vehicular circulation needs, including the need to address double parking challenges, the need to manage congestion with tools like signals that can smooth traffic, and the need to manage dangerous speeding, especially on arterial roads. Finally, as San Francisco transitions from combustion engines to electric vehicles, we need to be cognizant of charging infrastructure needs on the West Side. So we'll be bringing this content to West Siders through the SFTP Plus outreach and asking for help prioritizing across these needs, identifying any areas of need that we have missed, and finally for help prioritizing locations for improvements. And we'll take what we learn and work with SFMTA to develop 5 to 10 transportation concepts that address priority needs, then bring those ideas back out to West Siders for feedback during the SFTP's second round of outreach. And all of this will culminate in a final report and recommendations in early 2026. Thank you, commissioners. That concludes my presentation, and both Swanee and I are available to answer questions.
Thank you so much for that really great presentations. I also really look forward to comments and engagement from my colleagues in District 4 and District 1 as we are embarking on the work that folks will do after us for the next 30 years. So thank you. Commissioner Mandelman.
Thank you, Chair Melgar. And maybe this is just because of my recent trip to a place with great and abundant transportation serving all the housing. It does strike me that there's kind of a grim kind of acceptance of kind of the harsh realities baked into the way we're talking about this 2050 plan, and maybe that's part of like the necessity of what you do with a plan like this, but it seems like particularly as we're talking about adding housing on the West Side, I mean, one of the most, salient objections to some of that I've heard from people on the West Side is that there isn't the transportation infrastructure to serve it. And so I do think that whether in this document or another, I do think we need to be offering, you know, some vision and maybe not fully thought out pathway, but a more visionary planning document that actually anticipates delivering the infrastructure that we would need to serve the housing that we're planning for. It seems like there's a mismatch between very bold housing goals and very anemic transportation infrastructure expansion goals. And I don't really think that's going to work for our people. I don't think it helps us with things like the upzoning. I don't think it helps us with making the case for renewed transportation investment to the voters when they have to vote for things, because, I mean, this is a point that the transit riders make, but I think there's some truth to it, that if you're telling people they're going to have to pay more for service that maybe is good, maybe not quite as good as what you have now, but your life is otherwise going to get worse over the next 30 years, that's just not a good vision to be selling to the world. So I thank you for, you know, this and for the work that you're doing, and if we can figure out a way to have an appendix or have the other options or what it would look like if we really got our act together and had the state and federal government helping us at an appropriate level, but something that kind of shows where we would want to get over the next 30 years rather than where we think we may be going in our current grim, dystopian, sad reality.
Thank you, President Bindleman, and I would say amen to that. Does staff have any comment? I think Ms. Hyatt.
Sure. Rachel Hyatt, the Deputy for Planning. I just wanted to offer a way to sort of respond to what you're observing. The SFTP does have this investment scenario, which is financially constrained for the next 30 years. We also have a vision scenario, which includes, I think, another $15 billion, right, of potential unanticipated, unexpected, but the opportunity, right? The opportunity to, yeah. And that's where things like our major rail investments, for example, come through that, but also transit service expansion, right? So there's, we have that aspiration.
Yes, President Mendelman.
Well, I'm glad, and I saw the hints about that in the presentation, and I think it's important for us to, you know, present the world its most likely set of possibilities and also try to imagine some bolder action that is in step with what we actually need. So thank you.
Thank you. I will just add that, you know, sometimes it's difficult when you're facing a fiscal cliff, and you're in a moment of crisis, to dream about things being better and growing as opposed to just surviving. But San Francisco has always been able to do that. Throughout our history, we have faced so many challenges as a city, earthquakes, pandemics, all kinds of things. And what is, I think, just fundamental to our DNA and our ethos has been that ability to reinvent ourselves and come out better at the other end. So I, thank you for those comments. I think we can use this information as a map for what we need to do as leaders in terms of figuring out how to get to a better tomorrow for the next generations. Thank you. Okay, I'm seeing no one else on the roster for comments or questions. So let's go to public comment on this item, please, Madam Clerk.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 9? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for public comment. Going to the first caller. Hi, caller. Your 2 minutes begins now.
Hi. Thank you so much. Good afternoon, everyone. Marie Raviel here. I represent tens of thousands of San Franciscans who are increasingly sending me messages and sending messages to their neighborhood group leaders that they are frustrated and fed up with the state of the streets and transit in San Francisco. I can speak for a lot of people saying that we really care about Muni. We really care about getting that right, that operating functionally and well. One staff that has arisen to my consciousness and awareness recently, and it's come up in a recent SFMTA budget deep dive that we do on an ongoing basis. I would ask you all to join because I think you'll learn a lot. But one stat that came out recently is that I think it was just 5 years ago, the average Muni driver was clocking 1,700 hours a year. Now, remember, the normal work week is 2,000 hours a year. And now the average Muni driver is clocking 1,200 hours a year, but being paid 30% more. So I think there are some real challenging statistics and challenges that you need to face. But when I listen to this presentation and I see the things that you're talking about, you're really out of step with San Franciscans and the majority of San Franciscans. We all want great public transportation. What we do not want is to have all of our roads closed, to have lanes designated for buses only, to have all of our parking torn up.
Thank you for your comment, caller. Operator, is there additional public comment?
Going to the next caller. Hi, caller. Your 2 minutes begins now.
Hello again, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity. So as we continue our conversation on spending our dollars on transportation infrastructure or housing, I think it's important to reset the conversation and remind everybody that $1 million is the cost of a $1 million home. So when you look at an $8 billion portal, well, we are looking at the same cost as $1 billion home. And this is where Japan completely turns this equation on its back, because they are able to deliver transportation infrastructure for a fraction of what we're currently able to achieve in North America. And what do they do with the rest of the income? Well, obviously, they build housing. You've seen that during your trip in Japan. But another thing they've been able to do is to offer universal free healthcare. And that's where we need to go in California. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Moving to the next caller. Hi, caller. Your 2 minutes begins now.
All right. I got 2 minutes to talk about the West Side, right? Oh, that's cool. So the West Side. Let's think beach, chalet. Let's think about, you know, hotels, everything, good stuff down there. Actually, the one individual that really brought up a very good point in previous meetings was D9 Supervisor Fielder. Low cost to no cost transportation. Transportation for those who wish to go to and from San Francisco, free or next to low cost BART. This is not socialism. It's just ways and means of getting around town and exploring the city and contributing to the city and becoming part of the city. So it's a very good thought. Less cars, obviously, the Great Highway is catastrophe. It is a highway. It should always have been a highway. It should always be open to and from to the south, to the north, and thereabouts. So got to focus on bringing people in, incentivizing, telling them that they're going to have low cost for transportation. That's very, very important. And then obviously, you know, we still have the dilemma of what to do with the recall and the whole Great Highway fiasco. So we need to get that open, man. We need to get that open because it's really hindering a lot of people going to and from and emergency vehicles and so forth. So let's keep it going. Let's keep the progress. Great job, Supervisor Fielder. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, caller. There is no additional public comment.
Okay, thank you. Public comment on this item is now closed. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 10, introduction of new items. This is an information item.
Okay, I don't see anyone on the roster. So there's no new items to be introduced. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 11, public comment. Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 11? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment. And there is none.
Okay, public comment is now closed. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 12, adjournment.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.